Good morning and welcome once again to In Focus. I'm John Sims, and joining us this morning, local mental health advocates Doug and Mo McSwain. Doug heads up the Smith County Behavioral Health Leadership Team, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, John.
Okay, and Mo, his lovely wife. And the two of you have just really been all about mental health issues for the last several years now for a lot of reasons that have become familiar around the community, some of which we've talked about on the radio, going back to October of 2016 when you were honored by the Tyler Area Chamber of Commerce. But a lot of ground to cover today. This will be our first opportunity to really get an in-depth look from the two of you from our radio stations, on our radio stations, about what you've been doing the last few years, why you've been doing it, and how you're really trying to bring the whole community together around the issue of addressing mental health. Good morning, Doug and Mo. Great to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Don't forget, InFocus is available online. Just go to ktbb.com/InFocus. InFocus is uploaded to our website early in the morning, the day after the show airs. First of all, Doug, you and I have a longstanding, albeit a bit spotty, personal relationship. You and I go back to when the Tyler Together Strategic Planning Project was getting going back in 1991. Mm-hmm. And you've been an attorney with the Potter Minton Law Firm for quite a few years. Mo, I understand you're in the antique business.
Yes.
And mental health really got on your radar just maybe, I'm going to say a few years ago, and you can tighten that up for me and get a little bit more specific. Let's get your personal story for starters. How did you become so engaged with mental health? I know it was a very serious, a personal tragedy that got you on board with this.
Yeah, Mo and I have three children, one of whom's deceased. That's our son, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick had schizophrenia. So our story started because many times a mental illness doesn't show up until in males 18 to 25 and females a little later. But most typically, not always the case, but most typically when they go off to college or something like that, they get out of the structure of the environment, home environment, then you can see mental illness develop. For Patrick, Patrick was the starting point guard at All Saints. He was popular. We had kids over all the time. He did well in school. And so he went to Tech, and we got a call from him, and he asked me how long I'd been in the mafia and why did I put a chip in his head. And I thought he was joking. I almost thought he was joking. But then it became apparent that he was deadly serious. So I got in the car and drove to Lubbock to where he was going, Texas Tech, and came to his apartment. And his apartment looked like a tsunami hit it. I mean, there were wrappers everywhere. He was laying in the middle of the floor looking at the TV, and he goes, he thought I had been watching him the whole time through the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first experience with mental illness.
Okay.
So I brought him back to Tyler, took him directly to the Behavioral Health Center, and we began at that time what I would call a dark, dark journey down the world of mental illness. And I thought I might pause and give Mo a little bit share here.
Well, after we took him to behavioral health, he went back to school for a little while. We thought we had gotten him the treatment he needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget it. It was on September 1st, 2003. It was my birthday. Patrick called me. And I said, oh, you're coming home for my birthday. And the phone was quiet. And I thought, oops, he didn't even realize it is my birthday. And it turns out he was coming home because something was wrong. He knew it. He didn't know what. But he came home, and that was the beginning of a 9-year journey into mental illness. And I knew nothing about mental illness until we went through our own experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot to learn.
Okay. Doug, did you want to pick it up from there and just kind of continue?
So we bring him in, and he spent approximately 5 days in the Behavioral Health Center, and then we tried to start him on the appropriate medications, but it became difficult to find the appropriate medications for him. And, you know, then, back then in Texas, there just wasn't the facilities and resources that we needed to treat him.
Mm-hmm.
So we began to explore elsewhere. And, you know, he did go to Rust State Hospital because he was threatening suicide. And so when they threatened suicide, and you got to take steps, and so he was involuntarily committed. Well, Rusk then was not, it was almost as bad as being in jail, but he did receive some therapy. And then after that, we began to try to take him all across the United States to find help from him. I mean, we took him all over. But I think the interesting part is I would be working all day, and then I'd come home, and then I'd tend to Patrick. But Mo had to deal with him most all the day, and she might want to comment on that.
Okay.
Well, my job every day was to get up and just kind of see what kind of a state he was in that day. And, you know, I think it's interesting because Doug and I had never known anyone with a mental illness. We were not familiar with it. And it took us a while to figure out that there was something legitimately wrong. And what we learned is in Texas, we kind of have this pull yourself up by your bootstraps, independent spirit. And right. So we started out with the attitude, well, hey, he's depressed. Well, I have a bad day too. You know, just get over it. Like, get yourself up and get going.
Very familiar.
But we learned that it's a legitimate illness, just like cancer is a disease, diabetes is a disease, mental illness is a disease. The brain is an organ, and something can be wrong with it. And the person who is suffering cannot simply decide to no longer suffer. That's a ridiculous thought. When you would never tell someone who has cancer, just stop having cancer.
Like, right.
When you get up today, quit it. Or to a diabetic, don't have diabetes anymore. And we tend to do that with people who are mentally ill. We think they just need to pull themselves up out of it. But I heard it called recently, and I thought this was a good term, it's a brain-based illness.
Yes.
It's a legitimate thing. And the person who has mental illness didn't pick it. They didn't choose it. It's not because they made poor decisions, and it wasn't bad parenting. It's just an illness. The chemicals in the brain are off, and it's a legitimate illness that needs to be dealt with and treated.
We're talking to Doug and Mo McSwain, local mental health advocates. I'm John Sims. This is In Focus. Doug, of course, the head of the Smith County Behavioral Health Leadership Team, which is an organization that was formed just a few years ago. Out of the story that we're telling right now, we have maybe a couple of more minutes to hear the rest of your story about Patrick, because there are some other areas, quite a few other areas that we want to cover. Long story short, you just were frankly unsuccessful in your efforts, and I believe it was in 2012 your son took his own life.
He ended his own life on my birthday, exactly nine years to the day that he came home.
Okay.
We got the news on September 1st, 2012.
Well, some things I'd note that we should talk about. We did not know about mental illness. There weren't any resources available. I mean, you had NAMI, but that was
the National Association on Mental Illness, very active in Tyler, by the way.
And very good resource. But outside of that, we didn't have a lot of resources. And you understand that most families with a loved one with mental illness go insular. I mean, the stigma is so great. How do you tell anybody that your son has a mental illness, or your daughter, or your mother, your father, your loved one has a mental illness? You know, how will people perceive them? Will they be able to get a job? You know, is it going to affect their whole life? So most families go insular and are isolated. And that's the devastating part of that disease, is it isolates you from anybody that wants to give you help. And because of the stigma, and it isolated us, and you know, so we were fighting it. And when you fight mental illness, it's 24/7. It never goes away.
Right.
You're always dealing with it. And I've heard it said, and I forget where I read these statistics, but outside of maybe a divorce, and really more than a divorce, a family's dealing with a loved one with mental illness has the greatest amount of stress to deal with.
Okay.
Our son Patrick was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and he had a severe case of it. And so it was really tough. And I think, as Doug said, it's not just the person that battles the illness, Patrick battled very hard. He hated it more than anybody. He's actually was one of the bravest people I know in fighting to be well, and we fought along with him. So it's not just the person with the illness that suffers. The whole family does.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's 2012. You have lost your son to suicide because of a devastating mental illness, schizophrenia. And you, too, could have retreated, and your other family members could have retreated into your shell. You could have started feeling sorry for yourselves. There are any number of ways you could have dealt with this. You decided to take a proactive stance. Now, was this relatively soon after Patrick passed away, or did it take a little? I would imagine it would take a little while for you to make the adjustment and then realize we have to do something positive. Is that pretty much how it went for you?
Well, it's interesting because I really I spoke at Patrick's funeral and brought the issue out. And then I, you know, went back home and, you know, was just thinking, well, we've got to do this. We've got to get together a high-level group that understands the issues, that are the players in the field. We need to organize a conference where we speak about mental illness. I was thinking about all these things. And the key word in that was I am going to do this. And everything I tried just failed. And so I was sitting in my chair, and this is after everything I tried had failed. And, John, it's just hard to describe, but it's like a light appeared through the window, and I really felt God's presence. Mm-hmm. And he said, you're making the wrong decision. It's not you're going to do it. I'm going to do it, and I'll use you as I see fit. And then, not surprisingly, the one guy that had told me no, that I was counting on helping me, called me the next day, and he said, the Lord won't leave me alone. I'm going to help you. Mm-hmm. And so that began the process of trying to do what we can do to help other families and people who have mental illness. That's how it started.
And, okay, so it's now started. You've seen that light come on. The friend that initially turned you down calls you back and says, okay, I'm having second thoughts. And you hear from God, and he tells you that he wants to use you to do his work. And what happened next?
Well, it's kind of amazing. You know, all of a sudden, things started opening up. The same people I'd gone to initially to form this group, to bring them together in the same room, because they're all dealing with different aspects of the fight against mental illness. I called them up, and they go, sure. I'd love to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about peace of mind, and I was in
the Mental Health Conference, which happens every October. We'll talk about that a little in more detail in just a little while here.
And we started thinking, well, we're going to do one. And, you know, probably the best of all worlds was that the guy I was talking about came in and helped me. So I had some help in trying to organize the Peace of Mind Conference, but then it's just kind of like things started clicking.
Okay.
It wasn't anything I did. It really wasn't. It's just all of a sudden things I had been trying, it started coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just amazing.
And you had a lot of help, a lot of members on your team. And from what I understand, the Peace of Mind Conference, which is held every October, and I think the first one was in 2014. You have, the fifth one coming up this October, still in the planning stages.
Yeah.
The first four were held at the Crosswalk Conference Center at Green Acres Baptist Church, and I've actually attended the last three myself. But that was, I guess, the first thing that came out of your efforts to really do something about this. That was kind of the starting point?
Yeah, Peace of Mind was first.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that and what happens at a Peace of Mind conference.
Well, one of the most important things is to educate people. Educate families who are dealing with a mental illness. Educate a person that's dealing with a mental illness. And each time, it's had a different theme to it. The first year was talking about suicide and how you deal with that. Second was, you know, dealing with mental illness. What causes it? What's it about? How can you manage it? And it was, theme was, there's hope. And so each one has had a theme to it. I think the amazing thing about Peace of Mind is, you know, speakers were willing to come, like, you know, Kay Warren, whose husband is Rick Warren, and they wrote The Purpose-Driven Life.
Yes.
So she was on our target list of trying to get a speaker in because they had lost a son to suicide. And I remember that first year we were trying to get Kay to come in, and it was like, well, is that going to happen? Is it not going to happen? And then all of a sudden, Kay Warren says, I'll come.
Mm-hmm.
And each year, every time we've needed to find speakers, it's just God has provided the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been an incredible diversity of speakers. We've had, you know, Mike Vinnie, who has a mental illness, who spoke and was hilarious. He had humor added into it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how do you add humor into
it? I think I may have caught that one.
Yeah, he was great. And Fred Fries, Dr. Fred Fries, who's a assistant professor at Case Western. I mean, his was the most riveting I've ever seen because he has schizophrenia, and he brought us into his world, and it was one of the most riveting. But anyway, the first year, we thought on a Saturday morning during football season, we'd do good to get 200 people there. If we got 200 people there, it'd be a win, you know. Well, a month and a half ahead of time, registration had to be closed because we had already reached the limits of the fire marshal's limits.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people were on a waiting list, and we were getting calls all the time, please, my son, my daughter, my family member has mental illness. What do we do? I need to get to this seminar.
Okay.
I need to get there.
You bet. Let me jump in for just a minute. I'm John Sims. This is In Focus. We're talking to local mental health advocates Doug and Mo McSwain. Doug, the head of the Smith County Behavioral Health Leadership Team, and we'll get to that in a moment, how all of that got started and how it ties all the different components together. It's important to note, and we just had him on the air a few weeks ago, Chris Taylor with the Samaritan mm-hmm. Counseling Center of Tyler. They have really been probably the key partner in your effort to get this Peace of Mind conference up and going every single year. You partner with pretty much every key agency that deals with mental health issues in Smith County, but I just feel it's important to mention the Samaritan Counseling Center is such a key player in all of this. And one of the things that we have really kind of been talking about, either in so many words or by implication, all during the 15 or 17 minutes we've been doing the show so far, is the stigma of mental illness. And it's kind of the best of times, worst of times scenario, in my view, because on the one hand, that stigma is still very, very, very much in evidence. But just the fact that there were that many people that, and every year have been that many people that have been willing to show up for this Peace of Mind conference and sit through the whole thing and listen and learn. I believe there are a lot of medical professionals that come, nurses and people like that that come for continuing education units. That shows it tells me that your efforts are more than worthwhile and that they really need to continue. And on that note, if we can kind of segue into how what the Behavioral Health Leadership Team is and how it got started and what you've been up to, what you're continuing to work on, who some of the players are in that organization.
Yeah, so what we did is we created a list of stakeholders, and that's the term we use. But mm-hmm. these are people and organizations who are actively dealing with the mental health issues. We've got representatives from the hospitals. We've got representatives from the Andrews Center. We got representatives just across the community who have an interest in this, but we have over 48 spots on the BHLT.
Wow.
We have 80 that attend the meeting. There's two. We do a BHLT meeting every other month. In between, we've got two committees. One of them's called Prevention Intervention Maintenance, short, we call it PIM, that is trying to deal with how we get in early. How do we deal with it in the schools when it first manifests itself?
Mm-hmm.
How do we, as a community, start at the very beginning, which is the very best chances of treating the illness? So that committee is focused in that area. And then there's the Crisis Action Team, CAT for short, which is dealing with the mechanics of, you know, how do you work them up in the ER room? What's common medical protocols you could use? You know, how do we deal better with crisis situations? How do we deal when we need to get them in because they're threatening suicide or something threatening others.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So CAT deals with that.
Yeah, CAT being?
Crisis Action Team.
Crisis Action Team, pardon my short memory. There's a lot of information to digest. Okay, so again, I'm John Sims. This is In Focus. We're talking to Doug and Mo McSwain, local mental health advocates, and talking right now about the Smith County Behavioral Health Leadership Team, which is really a way of, in my view, from what you're telling me and from what I've read and heard so far, a way of pulling together and maximizing all the different resources trying to deal with mental health in Smith County. Let me ask you this. Can anybody be on the Behavioral Health Leadership Team or at least attend one of the meetings?
Yes, it's a public meeting.
Okay, very good. Time now to let them know how to get in touch with you if they want to know more about anything we're talking about today. I understand that you're willing to give out your cell phone number and an email address where people can get in touch with you for more information.
Sure. But the Doug, D-O-U-G, McSwain, M-C-S-W-A-N-E, at Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R, Minton, M-I-N-T-O-N.com.
Okay.
And my cell's 903-376-6267. I would encourage anybody who's calling to find out about this information, please leave me a voicemail.
Okay.
Because I get a lot of calls, and if I don't have a voicemail associated with that call, sometimes I don't answer it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of do the same thing. In this day and age, you have to be very careful about that, robocalls and whatnot. Yeah. Okay, Doug McSwain at PotterMinton.com. I'll just give it real quick, and we can repeat some of this information later in the show, and the cell number is 903-376-6267. Anything that's interesting to any of our listeners today about the show, or if you want to get involved with this Smith County Behavioral Health Leadership Team, just give Doug a call or shoot him an email. You mentioned the hospitals. I wanted to just mention again NAMI, the National Association on Mental Illness. I know they're one of your partners, and of course the Samaritan Counseling Center, which has been a key partner in just really getting everything up and going. So how are things going with the Behavioral Health Leadership Team? Are you having good success?
Yes. So the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute, which is a part of the Meadows Foundation, helped us organize the BHLT, the Behavioral Health Leadership Team. They sent us two consultants, Ken Minkoff and Chris Klein, and they guided us through the process of getting to the point where we can own the problem and we can start dealing with it ourselves, by we being Tyler in East Texas.
Okay.
So one of the first things we raised money to do was to get an overall comprehensive report as to the gaps in the delivery of our behavioral health services. Now, when I say behavioral health, that includes substance abuse and mental illness.
Okay.
And that's what the difference is. Behavioral health includes both those.
Okay.
So they got us a comprehensive report that kind of laid a roadmap as to what we need to do to improve things in East Texas. And we've been working through that report in the committee, both the subcommittees and the committee, determining what we think needs to be done in Tyler, what are the low-hanging fruit that we can get done earlier, and then what is the fruit that it's not going to be low-hanging that we can get done.
Okay. Getting down fairly close to the end of the show, we still have maybe 6 or 7 minutes left to talk, and I do want to review some of the things that we talked about earlier in the show. But one thing, I would, just from visiting with you ahead of time and talking to you on the show this morning, I get the feeling that this may be the most important thing we want to get across to people, and that is the importance of encouraging people and their family. There is hope if they can get treatment. In other words, if something like what happened with your son Patrick happens to anybody who's listening today, anybody in your family, your circle of friends, don't shut them out, don't give up, don't throw up your arms. Get help, and one of the first things you can do, I would say, is to get in touch with Doug, and that's Doug McSwain, D-O-U-G-M-C-S-W-A-N-E, at PotterMinton.com, or give him a call on that cell phone at 903-376-6267, and please, if you don't catch Doug live, make sure and leave a voicemail, or your call is unfortunately probably not going to get returned. Just leave a quick voicemail, let Doug know how to reach you, and you'll get back to him. But what else? What else can people do? What do they need to keep in mind is if something happens to somebody like what happened to you and Mo, and they don't know where to turn, what would be the first step they should take, besides maybe making that phone call to you?
First of all, let's suppose that their loved one is threatening suicide and threatening harm to others. If they're doing that, then you need to call the police and have the police come out.
Okay.
Now, I would recommend that you call the sheriff's office first. We've got CIT, crisis intervention training officers, who specifically are trained in these mental illness emergencies. And I would try to get David Biggs or those that are on the CIT. So I'd call the sheriff's office first if you're facing that. Now, if you can't get through, you can't get to them, then you need to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to go to jail probably until we can, you know, have a hearing and determine if they're needed treatment. So one scenario is they're threatening suicide or harm to themselves. You go directly to that deal. I suppose they're not. What can you do? Well, the first thing is to realize that a person with a mental illness, when they're saying stuff, they really believe that. That's their world. Reason's not going to change their mind. So you try to convince them to come get help. Let's go see a psychiatrist. Let's go see a counselor, like the Samaritan Counseling Center. You know, let's just go there and visit with them. And let's work through the process. And a lot of times they'll respond to that because particularly when they're seeing it early on, they know what to do. The other option for a lot of families is NAMI is a great organization because then you're not isolated anymore. You have people who understand what you're going through that can help you, that can understand it. That's the most important part. Do not let yourself become isolated.
Mm-hmm.
It's tempting, but don't do it.
Mm-hmm. From my own experience, I can speak briefly about NAMI. It's a very strong, very welcoming, very inclusive support organization. Support and more. Support and advocacy. But they meet once a month. They have actually two separate support groups that meet during the course of the meeting, and the attendance has mushroomed lately. People are waking up. There's still a very strong stigma. It is still a very, very, very tough battle. And I know you don't want to create the impression that if you press a magic button or call a certain agency, you're going to get the problem solved overnight. No way is that going to happen. But you have to get started with it. It's tough, but there is help available. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, there's a lot more help available now than there was 5, 10, 15 years ago.
It's night and day. It's night and day.
You bet. I want to go over some of the specific organizations just to give you some examples. When you talk about the Smith County Behavioral Health Leadership Team, the Samaritan Counseling Center, of course, the Andrews Center, UT Health North Campus, Tyler, which has become very strong. I think you mentioned with their component of psychiatric help that's available now, which has been a real challenge in the Tyler Smith County area in recent years, but they're helping out with that a lot. The UT Health East Texas Behavioral Health Center, which under a different name was where you first took Patrick, I believe, back in the early part of the century, and the National Association on Mental Illness, or NAMI. Just a lot of different resources. And you can tie all of those together, at least as a starting point, by getting in touch with Doug McSwain, who's joining us on the show today with his wife, Mo. Doug McSwain at PotterMinton.com, and Doug's cell number 903-376-6267. That probably essentially covers most of what we're going to have time to talk about today. And this is one of those things, it seems like every week on this show I say we could talk for 2 hours. We could talk for probably 200 years about this, and we're going to have to cut it short. But again, we have just less than a minute to go. But go ahead.
Well, I just want to thank you for having us, because I think talking about mental health is a giant step towards making a difference. I think it just needs to be a part of our conversation to remove the stigma. So thank you for having us.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in. I believe that we've accomplished something today, even spending a half an hour talking about this, and knowing that there are a lot of people out there listening and learning is encouraging to me personally. That is our show, though, and maybe it'll only be the beginning. I hope it is. Doug and Mo McSwain, local mental health advocates, our guests this morning on In Focus. Thank you so much again for joining us. Doug and Mo, keep doing the great things you're doing. I'm John Sims. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on In Focus.
Your only local news radio. This is KTBB Tyler, KTBB FM Troop Tyler Longview, and KTBB.com. The Friendly Class on KTBB is brought to you by Marvin United Methodist Church in downtown Tyler.